Well, as we've gone through the series on the heroes of old, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Abraham and trusting God in the midst of the unknown and the unexpected. And I had people say, I really wish you wouldn't preach on that because then God tests me in that way. And then the next week, we talked about Joseph. And we talked about Joseph, how God is with us even in circumstances that may seem difficult and unexpected, that God is there showing his favor and his presence in our lives even when it's hard to see. And then I had people say, really, that was right on point. That was exactly. So I'm sorry that we're walking through this series this summer because it seems to be getting people in different ways. But this morning, we're going to talk about God using you in a powerful way. So if God ends up calling you into something, I'm sorry. I'm just falling through the sermon series. We're just trying to keep going through it. So I apologize for that. But today we're talking about Moses, and we're talking about Moses from the standpoint of he was someone that God used in a powerful kind of way. And the question you might be asking yourself is, could God use even me? How can God use even me? You might be thinking to yourself, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not talented enough, I'm not equipped enough, and how can God use me for some sort of purpose when I seem so insignificant? Now, Moses, a little bit about his background that is helpful to know. In the beginning of Exodus, we find out that some things have happened since Joseph was around. Remember, Joseph became very prominent in the nation of Egypt. And it ended up leading to the Israelites having this favored spot within the nation of Egypt. But some time passes, we get to a Pharaoh, a king of Egypt, who does not remember Joseph, does not remember the promise and the favor that was given to Joseph and to his family. And they end up becoming enslaved, and they're enslaved as a part of some of the work that's going on in Egypt. And Moses is a Hebrew child that is born to the Israelites from the tribe of Levi. And as he's born, it's during a time when they are persecuting the younger children. They want to get rid of all of the boys that are born into the Hebrew family. And so that they're trying to kill them all off. But his mom hides him. And then when he becomes old enough that she can't hide him anymore, she ends up putting him in a basket, putting him into the river. And he ends up being found and given to the daughter of Pharaoh. And it's actually kind of a cool God moment where the daughter of Pharaoh says, I need someone to nurse him. And so she actually gives him back to Moses' mom to take care of him. But he ends up being raised in Pharaoh's household as the daughter of, as the son of the daughter of Pharaoh. And some time passes, and he's kind of in a little bit more privileged position. And there ends up being a dispute between a couple of Egyptians and an Egyptian that was treating harshly one of his fellow Hebrews. And so Moses does something that we don't recommend, that's actually against the Ten Commandments, that Moses would end up being the one to scribe for the Lord. And he ends up killing the Egyptian who was treating the Hebrew harshly. And so that happens, and then he thinks that he's done it discreetly, but it ends up being, and he felt justified in doing it, but it ends up being found out. And they see him, and he realizes that people know about this mistake that he has made. So he flees. He runs off to this place called Midian, which is in a nearby desert. He ends up getting married. He ends up living his life. And he is completely aside from the people of God. He has not been back to Egypt. And that's where we encounter Moses in our story. We know that Moses is roughly about 80 years old when this happens. He has been in hiding for about 40 years. And he has been running from God, wondering, could God even use me? And that's when God intersects into the midst of his story. You might have had moments in your life where you were looking at it and you were going, gosh, could I even be used? Could I even be qualified? One of my favorite stories about my life, something that happened to me when I was a teenager. Just for those of you who aren't from Valdosta, we have this little theme park here called Wild Adventures. And Wild Adventures does concerts every summer. And one of the concerts that they do every year, I can't begin to understand this, why this is still a thing. But they have this Christian rock band called Skillet that comes and plays a concert every single summer and have for like 20 plus years. Well, a long time ago, Skillet was a hot name in Christian music, and they came through my hometown of Macon, Georgia. And my youth pastor was a part of the group that was organizing Skillet to come and play. And so he invited my band that I played in, this Christian rock band, we were super cool, he invited us to come and open up for Skillet. Now, when I say that we were unqualified for this, I mean we were unqualified for this. I had a guitar amp that was about the size of this piece of wood. I mean, it wasn't big enough to play an arena with a big, prominent Christian rock band playing as the headliner. Our drummer had such a cheap drum set that it started falling apart literally in the middle of us playing. I broke a string on the very first song. I ended up having to use my backup guitar, which was my dad's guitar that was bought out of like a Sears catalog in the 1970s. I mean, it was just a disaster. The sound wasn't right. We weren't ready for it. Our bass player had to kind of like stand like this, straddling the stage to keep the drums from falling over. And it was just a complete comedy, completely ridiculous. But you know what? This is the incredible thing that happened with that. I had that experience. I had that moment. It was incredibly humbling. And from that moment, I was 15 years old when that happened. So over 25 years have passed since that moment. Since that moment, I have never been nervous in front of a group of people. It was as though God was preparing me through that humbling experience to never be nervous again in front of people. And so some time passes, and one of the things we joked about, Emily and I were talking about the mission team being here, and she said, "Do you want anybody from the group to speak?" And I said, no, not really. I think we've got enough planned in the service. And she said, "Okay, good, because, you know, I'm used to going on these mission trips," and then they will go, "And now Sister Emily is going to come bring us a word." And maybe those of you who have led mission teams have had that experience before. I remember a very treasured story in my life was the very first mission team that I led. I was 22 years old, leading a group of college students. I'm only like a year older than them, but I was the leader of the group, and we showed up in Brazil, and they said, "We're going to have a church service tonight, and one of you is going to preach, and then we have a church service tomorrow morning, and one of you is going to preach," and everybody else in the group turns and looks at me and says, "One of you is going to preach," and all the fingers are pointing in my direction, and I wasn't ready for it. I didn't feel equipped for it, but God had prepared me for that moment by terrifying me as a 15-year-old to know that I could handle whatever was going to be thrown my way. But there are moments in our lives where we're questioning, maybe it's because of our past, maybe because it's a mistake that we made, maybe it's because we don't feel like we have the skill set for it, where we just look around and we say, "Isn't there anybody else?" Like Emily might be sitting there going, "Who is Sister Emily? Anybody else go by that name?" I was sitting there going, could we point our fingers at anybody else? And sometimes when God prods us, when God moves us in the direction of wanting to use us for his purposes, that's our tendency. We look around, we kind of wonder, isn't there anybody else that you could use? How could you use even me? But we have this awesome story about Moses. And Moses is traveling along, and he's just kind of been living his life. He's tending the flocks over in Midian. He's minding his own business. He's probably by this point long forgotten about his time in Egypt. And all of a sudden, there's this burning bush. And this burning bush appears, and it begins talking to him, which would freak me out. And he's a little startled by the experience. And we pick up in verse 5, and it says, this is the Lord speaking, "Do not come any closer," God said. "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground." Then he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And at this, Moses hid his face, because he was afraid to look at God. The very first thing that God is going to do in the life of Moses before he calls Moses to serve him is he's going to humble him. Our God is a God that will humble us. Our God is a God that will make sure that we are in the right place. And so he wants to make clear the presence of who he is in. He wants him to know that he is on holy ground. And he says, "Hey, take off your sandals because the place where you are standing is holy ground." When I was a teenager, I remember hearing a sermon, and it was about this passage. And I remember the preacher said that he always read it, and he thought that just that much leather of the sandals was too much to be between Moses and God. He needed to take that little bit away to be completely humbled in the presence of God. Taking off his shoes was a means of not just humbling himself and being humbled in the presence of God. It was also a step, a mighty step, of being drawn closer to the presence of God. I took that to heart, and all through my years of playing music, I was, before I became a pastor, and spent several years leading music in different churches and campus ministries. What I would always do is I would wear flip-flops. They weren't sandals like Moses wore. They were cheap Old Navy flip-flops, that thick plastic. And I would take off that rubberized plastic flip-flop whenever I got ready to lead worship, because I said, I don't want anything between me and God. I want to be reverent. I want to be humble. I want to be in the right place. I did that all the way up until I had a job where I was in a transition point between being a music leader and going into an associate pastor role. And I kid you not, the only negative mark that I have ever received on a job evaluation was there was a 75-year-old retired pastor who was serving part-time at that church, and he was my supervisor. And he wrote me up for wearing flip-flops. And my first instinct was to go, but Moses, it's so I can take my shoes off and be on holy ground and be in the presence of God. But instead, I said, you know what? I feel like God's calling me into pastoral ministry. I might want to listen to the 75-year-old retired pastor about what's going to be expected of pastors. And so I made that shift in my life. But for me, I still mentally go through that. If I'm going to serve God, if I'm going to lead in worship, if I'm going to get up and preach, if I'm going to lead in any kind of significant way, it's got to begin with a spirit of humility, a spirit of knowing that God is God and I am not. And that's exactly what happens in this moment. There's a spirit of reverence. And we can't run out and be used by God if we are going out in our own strength, if we are going out with the expectation of what we can do, if we're going out with the expectation that it's all about us and that we've got the skill set to make it happen. It's got to begin with this place of reverence and humility, of knowing that it is God that is with us. And when we are in the presence of God, when we are serving God, we've got to be aligned to him and give him the glory and give him the praise. And so we begin with a sense of that humility like Moses had there in that moment at the burning bush. And then we hear a little bit about why God has shown up on the scene and why God might be calling Moses. The next few verses say this: "The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them." In other words, we have a God who responds to us, who responds to our needs. And whenever there is a need, whenever there is a cry, we have a God who hears that cry. I can't help but think about that story that Emily shared earlier about the church and the school that was on the verge of being closed. She shared with me the other day that the government was ready to come in and just shut it down. It didn't have the means that it needed. They didn't have the supplies that they needed. But there was a mission team that showed up last week in just the right time. They would have been shut down tomorrow, more than likely. But a mission team shows up at just the right time, is able to serve. And because other teams that were there had been given more donations and more supplies than they needed for the site they were working on, God ended up providing for their needs and ended up paving the way for them to continue to serve and them to continue to minister within their community. We have a God who responds to us. We have a God who hears. And in fact, these words that we hear in verse 7 about him hearing and I have come down, it's a direct response to what we heard at the end of chapter 2, in which the people are crying out to God. They are groaning before God in desperate need for God to respond to their needs. We have a God who responds to us. We have a God who knows everything that we need. We have a God that is there to come at just the right time, with just the right word, with just the right direction to point us towards what we need. And in this moment of crisis, God shows up to speak to Moses, and he lets him know, I am a God who hears. I have heard about their oppression. And we talk about the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And as my Old Testament professor would say, the Budlites and the Millerites. I mean, it's just like all these ites, all these people that are on the scene that are causing issues. And yet, there they are being oppressed by Egypt. And he wants them to know, I am a God who hears. I am a God who responds in your moment of need, in your moment of crisis. And then verse 10, so now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Now, hold up here. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Now, if we're thinking about this from Moses' standpoint, we're looking at this and we're going, wait a second. All right, so this burning bush shows up, says, I've heard about all the struggles that are going on with the Perizzites and the Jebusites and all those people and the Egyptians. I'm here to respond. You're on holy ground. Take on your shoes. I am the Lord your God. So now go. I'm sending you. If I'm Moses, I'm thinking to myself, what has qualified me for this task? What is it that you would say, I'm the right person for this? So just now, go. That's the next thing that God says. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. That ought to be a quick conversation. And so Moses naturally objects to this. Verse 11, he says to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Now, there's something very important in this phrase that we need to take note of. He says, who am I? Who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? He's thinking about it from the standpoint of what he can do. He's thinking about it from the standpoint of what he is capable of doing. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? And it's not the humility that God's trying to generate within him. It's kind of this false humility of saying, oh, you should send somebody else. Who am I? He doesn't have a sense of trust, a sense of confidence in it. And in the next chapter, in chapter 4, we actually hear these words where Moses says to the Lord in verse 10 of chapter 4, pardon your servant, Lord. I want to talk to God that way. That's a beautiful phrase. Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. In other words, in chapter 3, he says, who am I? Who am I that I would have this task? Who am I that you would call on me to do this? And in chapter 4, he even makes it more explicit. He says, I'm not even a good speaker. I'm slow of speech. I have never been eloquent. How could you possibly use me? You want me to go talk to Pharaoh, the most powerful person on earth, and you want the person who can barely put together a complete sentence. And that's who you want to go and speak to Pharaoh on your behalf. Here's the response in chapter 3 that the Lord gives. And God said, I will be with you. Moses asked, who am I? Who am I? What about me? And the Lord says, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. I am has sent me to you. And what we see is we have a God who will equip us for what we need. And the way that God equips Moses, it's in a lot of different ways. He will give him signs. He will give him wonders. There are so many displays of God's divine power and glory that are demonstrated through Moses on his behalf to open up the door for what ultimately ends up being the exodus and the freedom of God's people. But the most important thing that God gives him is he says, that I will be with you. The most important thing that he gives him is when Moses says, who am I that I should go and do this? The Lord's response is, I am. The Lord's response is, I will be with you. The Lord's response is, I am who I am. Now that phrase, I am who I am, it also could be translated as, I will be who I will be. In other words, God's name, the best description that we can give of God is that God is. God is the word be. God is the word be. God is the one who always exists, who always will be, who always will be the one that we need. When we waver, when we are uncertain, God is I am. God is I will be who I will be. And a lot of times when we think of ourselves, when we think about what we're capable of doing, we kind of have this little tension within us. I saw this cartoon the other day that kind of explains what happens a lot of times. So ego is puffed out, but it doesn't go very deep. It says, I am capable, I will do it. Confidence is more rooted. You don't see the big puffed out ego. What you see instead is the deep rootedness and foundation. And when we trust in God, when we trust in the God who is who he is, who will always be who we will always be, we are rooted in the confidence and the faith of knowing that despite whatever presents itself on our behalf, that we are rooted in God, that our confidence comes from knowing that he is be. Now that word be is defined this way. It means to exist. It means to exist. When we think about the name of God, we think about God's name as being simply be. God is the one who exists. God is the one who is. I am who I am. I will be who I will be. His name is be. And that's so important for us because when we think about our lives, oftentimes we look at it and we think to ourselves, I am not capable. Who am I? We think of ourselves as not being eloquent. We think of ourselves as not being gifted enough. We think of ourselves, maybe like Moses did, of looking back on our past and mistakes that we've made and said, God couldn't possibly use me. And we look at all of our inconsistencies and all of our wavering and all of our doubt and all of our confusion and everything about our life that does not seem to be stable and on the right track. And God's response to us in the midst of that is, I am. I am be. I will be who I will be. I am. When you are unstable, God is the one who is firm, who exists, who is be. When we feel insignificant, God is the one who always has been and always will be. When we think about our lives in comparison to God, it's as though we are looking at God and seeing one that is greater than anything that we could imagine. And he promises to be with us. He promises to respond to us. He promises to give us what we need in those moments of crisis, in those moments of difficulty. And it doesn't matter the answer to the question, who am I? What matters is who is God. And God is the one who always is. When I was growing up, I remember learning the phrase to be belittled, to be belittled. Belittled, if you belittle someone, you are essentially making them feel less than. You're kind of putting them in their place. You want to belittle someone and put them in the right place and kind of lower them down. But in God's economy, in this story, and what it means to follow God and to serve God, it's not about being belittled. It's not being about putting our place and being, you know, looked down upon. It's really more as though looking at God as the be and just understanding that we're little in response to that. That he is be, I am little, and it doesn't matter how little I am as long as I know be. It doesn't matter how incapable I am as long as I know the one who is. It doesn't matter how insignificant I feel, as long as I know the one who is. And our trust and our confidence, our hope, is rooted not on what we can do on our own. Our hope and our confidence is in knowing that we belong to God. So this morning as we close, I want to invite you just to surrender yourself, to surrender your heart to that truth, to that promise of knowing that he is the God who is. And you may feel insignificant. You may feel as though God couldn't possibly use you. You may not feel like you're good enough. But we're reminded over and over and over again throughout Scripture that we serve a God who will always be there with us and a God who calls even those who do not feel equipped. And the promise is not in who we are. The promise is in who he is. And so may we this morning surrender to who he is in everything in our lives.